Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast, where, to be honest, we've probably given up trying to predict Everton's performances and results at this point. We were looking forward to potentially Everton's 12th away league win of the season later this week, but now it's not transpired that way. Everton played out a pretty bland and pretty disappointing 0-0 draw at Villa Park. So I am here to discuss it. I'm your host, Adam Jones. Today, joined by Chris Beasley and Gav Buckland. And we might as well dive straight in, lads and bees. It was a bit flat, wasn't it? A bit uninspiring from Everton in the end, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like we were saying, you've had to grind out these results anyway, and it wasn't exactly free-flowing football all the time at West Ham United, but there was a bit more about them. Carlo had said, hadn't he, it would be very different than the meeting with Aston Villa at Goodison Park, where he'd counted all those individual errors. You know, they were a lot more organised and workmanlike, but, you know, with that comes, I suppose, a lack of creativity as well. I mean, they did have chances again at times, we've been saying in recent weeks, poor decision-making. They just seemed to take the wrong pass or do the wrong thing in the final third. And Andre Gomez, again, a couple of opportunities for him when he did come off the bench. I thought he should have done a lot better with those. But on the whole, yes, it was a game, I suppose. It was marginally better than the one at Brighton Hove Albion. But yeah, one, you just have to move on from that one. But most disappointing that, you know, Everton couldn't string together, you know, consecutive results. That's what they'd need, a sequence of results in the game. They couldn't do it two consecutive matches.
Mm. Gav, I think Bees is quite right there. I think, you know, I was tweeting this yesterday. Everton haven't built their amazing away form this season on, you know, swashbuckling,
no,
free flow and attacking football in any stretch of the imagination. You know, it has been this sort of organised defensive unit, and Everton did at least have that yesterday, but as Bees quite rightly says, they just, well, for a start, I don't think they created enough chances, and for two, the chances that came, they just didn't take, did they?
Yeah, I was just thinking, Bees has just redefined the phrase, damning with faint phrase, phrase there, isn't he, by saying it was marginally better than Brighton. I can't even remember Brighton. So I assume
there, what you're saying, I can't remember it now.
Wiped it out, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I just thought it was, yeah, I seen what you said yesterday, I think you said in your piece afterwards, Ad, that they found this season on a away form, on a sound record. Is that four or five clean sheets on the bounce now?
It's away from home, but we've offered.
I mean, we've had some good performances, Leicester away, Wolves away, Leeds. Played really well in those three games.
I've argued we played ironically well on the opening day as well.
Yeah. Ironically, you know, some of our poorer ones have been against teams in the second half at, you know, bottom half the table. And that was, you know, that was a similar game to the Arsenal game, wasn't it, yesterday, I thought. We played much, much better at West Ham, where we obviously had the game plan, we just adhered to it. It was quite easy to carry out. Yes, it's like a home, isn't it? That's where we've got to go for it a little bit more and make things happen ourselves, as that's when we're found wanting a little bit at the moment. And I think you said also as well, which I agree, that whether three at the back was a waste against Villa, maybe we should have just had two centre-halves and two full-backs and had three midfield, three up front. He was screaming out for that for me. You're playing Villa, dude, let's face it. When Grealish isn't playing, and I know Ollie Watkins wasn't playing yesterday, pretty much, you know, they're average, aren't they, mid-table, and they've done well to get there. So we've got to go for a little bit more in terms of lineup, haven't we? You know, three centre-halves and two full-backs, plus Decore and Allen aren't going to exactly score you know, a number of goals for it, are they? It was screaming 4-3-3 yesterday. And when we went forward a little bit in the second half, thinking it's a bit too little, too late here.
I mean, I think picking up on that point, Bees, I think Gav's exactly right. You know, with Ollie Watkins not playing, I think Dean Smith admitted it after the game that, you know, Aston Villa didn't have those runners, you know, in behind, or, you know, somebody who was going to be closing down the centre-backs all that time. It was Keenan Davis, who's a very, very different sort of striker. And I personally think he's somebody that Keenan Godfrey, for example, could have coped with by themselves. So, you know, the presence of having Mason Holgate there, you know, while it did, you know, provide a very good defensive shield for Everton, I think Everton could have kept the same defensive shield and afforded another player an attack if they'd have swapped Holgate out for, say, you know, even a Josh King, or, you know, like a Bernard or a Iwobi or something like that.
Yeah, I think I saw a stat doing the rounds for the game yesterday that Everton were the only team in the Premier League and the ones throughout the Football League who hadn't been beaten by 3 goals all season. So you know they're not going to get turned over, not going to get battered. But yeah, in these games against supposedly lesser opposition, well, let me say supposedly, you know, they're below Everton in the table. I think man for man, their resources are less. Yeah, there's definitely an argument to be said that Everton should be more expansive of, again, with the 3 centre-backs. I mean, I think, I don't know, it's having experienced the Walter Smith years. I'm always very nervy about the 3 centre-backs with Everton anyway. But yeah, Carlo obviously knows how to play that system. And he's comfortable with that. It's done well for Everton at times this season. But yeah, this is one of those games where you think, especially given that they needed the win to get that, to sort of close that gap on those teams above them now in this final push for Europe, that you could have been more of a attack miners. You know, Ollie Watkins, like we said, has run them ragged at times at Goodison Park, and obviously he's scored that goal in the corresponding fixture only a few days earlier. But yeah, without him in the side, Grealish didn't come on until later. Of course, that did give them something extra, and he was full of his box of tricks when he did come on. But for over an hour there, it was Villa were there to be got at, and they had been more attacking players on the pitch, and Everton might have carved open a few more opportunities. But I mean, as it was, the forward players were feeding on scraps a lot of the time, and Calvert-Lewin had a couple of good chances, forced a couple of good saves out the keeper. But Richarlison's really struggling at the moment. He had that great purple patch. Was it something like 6 goals in 6 games? I think it's 10 games without a goal now, and he needs to hit form right now, really. And otherwise, it's just Everton going to feel fall just shorter for you.
Well, it's another game that highlights Everton's lack of creativity, doesn't it, Gav? I mean, when James Rodriguez isn't in this team, you know, Luca Dean is Everton's second most creative player. And, you know, while it's obviously fantastic that Everton have got a left-back who can create so many chances, it shouldn't be the case that he is the most creative player on the pitch. Everton need somebody a little bit further forward than that to be taking up that mantle, don't they?
Yeah, well, Sigurdsson should, in theory, create as well, shouldn't he?
And to be fair, I think in that system, it doesn't really suit him, does it? Like, I don't think being a third man in the midfield there is really his game, is it?
No, exactly. And took the words right out of my mouth there, to be fair. That goes back to the system. That goes back to what the system we were talking about at the start, you know, that it's not going to get the best out of Sigurdsson, I think, either. I mean, it's set pieces, isn't it? And Rodriguez and maybe Sigurdsson and Dina. Towards you, respect Richarlison can occasionally. Andre Gomez has popped up with the odd one or two, but it's just a lack of creativity. And we were just, you know, I was watching the second half yesterday and you're thinking, just we're offering nothing here. You know, which as we've done away from home, you know, for the large part of the new year. And I say that points to a lack of creativity, and we shouldn't be reliant on James just to produce the goods for us all the time, because he's only going to be fit at best 50% of the time, as we've seen, or in the team 50% of the time. Yeah, and that's just reflected our goals too. I mean, since you've had that early flurry at the start of the season, maybe had, 5-4 two. I mean, I would imagine we got, 12 goals in our first four games, something like that, in the Premier League. We've probably averaged less than a goal a game since then, haven't we?
Yeah.
Which, if you want to get in Europe, that's not a great great return, even if you are keeping it tight at the other end. Yeah, so Carlo's spoken before, hasn't he, about transfer targets, just a increase in creativity from the midfield. Actually, strangely, I thought we may want to talk about Gomez, but when he, and maybe because of the time of the game he came on, when he actually thought, at least he was trying to be a little bit dynamic when he came on, Gomez, that was just my, he saw a bit of the ball and stuff. But yeah, it was difficult, wasn't it, for, I think, if you start off with three at the back and the midfield set up like it is, do you have difficulty changing a gear during the course of the game?
Yeah.
You know, you're going from a very low base, aren't you, to something that you want to, where you want to really impose yourself on the opposition. And I think that's a really difficult thing to do when you've started off from a low defensive base at the start of the game.
Yeah. It's easy to look back on these kinds of games with hindsight, isn't it? But before the game, how surprised were you to see Tom Davis drop from the starting lineup? Because I thought he was very, very good against West Ham. He allowed Alan to put in one of his best performances in an Everton shirt. And I know, obviously, Abdoulaye Doucouré came back and it was great to see him back. But I was still personally a little bit surprised that that Tom dropped out again.
Yeah, I think he can count himself very unfortunate in that respect. You say on the man on the course, fit again, Abdoulaye Doucouré, who until he had his injury problems, I've been more or less first name on the team sheet, I imagine, for most of the season. You know, he played so many minutes. So if Carlo feels that it's time to bring him back in, that's fair enough. But yeah, Davis, unfortunate to be the man who did miss out. Gylfi Sigurdsson again was perhaps seen as being someone who'd be a bit more creative. And there we are saying that Everton do need that creativity. But again, was it a great deal? From him, I imagine that with these games coming so thick and fast now for this last segment of the season, what is it, four games in the space of 10 days, something like that, just 2 days rest between Sheffield United and 2 days again before Wolves, Carlo will inevitably shuffle his pack again and try and find the right blend in the midfield for those games. But Tom can definitely count himself unlucky to be the one who did have to miss out on that occasion, and he may well be back in, I would imagine either on Sunday or Wednesday, he's going to be getting some minutes. But yeah, he can feel a bit aggrieved by that particular decision. But I mean, somebody had to make way for Doucouré.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What do you reckon, Gab? Do you think anything would have been much different if Davis had been in for,
No.
If he'd have been in for Sigurdsson?
Only for the change the formation to a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
I think. I can see why he was dropped, because I think Carlo spoke about Tom after the West Ham game. He said about needing to do more with the ball. And we spoke about the pod on Monday or Tuesday, saying that we think that the role is more for him, it's more of a defensive midfielder, as a holding player. And I think last night, I think obviously Carlo's thoughts, well, if I've got playing three at the back, I don't need a whole midfield player as well. So therefore, I can have my two midfielders. If they're framed by two fullbacks as well, I can have my two midfielders who are a little bit more box to box. The pair of them, it's Alan and Doucouré. So I think it was to quote one of Carlo's favourite phrases, I think it was a technical decision.
Yeah,
rather than a critique of Tom's form. To be fair, I think it was just setting up that middle two to suit the bank of three defenders and the four in midfield, really. And I don't think it's really Carlo criticising Tom there. I think it's just a tactical thing with the two in the middle.
I mean, sticking with you, Gav, as well. I mean, we've talked about Richarlison's form a little bit earlier, but what do you make of him and Calvert-Lewin as a partnership? Because I saw a few people on social media throughout the game yesterday saying to themselves, these two don't really link up together. They don't really create that many chances for each other, do they? And that, I think that is something that I've noticed over the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, this I think this came to a head on Saturday, on Sunday, wasn't it? Where in the aftermath of the game against West Ham, there was various, you know, comments on social media. Do they actually like each other? You know, in terms of that. But obviously, at the same time, sure, in the game, the last thing they paid to want to do is pass to each other. And I get that. There's a couple of things going on there, Ad. I think, first of all, is you don't know, a front pair, and it's a very rare thing, isn't it, in football these days? You don't often get it for a start. Are they two? They similar type of players, similar physiques, similar styles of play. You know, Richarlison's good in here as well, isn't he? Are they two similar to make it work? Do you need two slightly two dissimilar centre forwards? And also as well, if they don't play for one another, isn't that sort of reflecting the fact that there's very little creativity going on elsewhere? So we can't get the ball into meaningful positions for them to create in the first place. I think that comes into it. I think it's sort of coming back into vogue playing two up top. But you've got to have the right two. And I'm not sure whether at the moment we said early on in the season when he started doing this, it's more to suit Richarlison that, isn't it, than Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah,
because Calvert-Lewin is a nat on the 4-3-3, isn't he? Centre forward, get out wide, get to the byline, get crossing, all that type of stuff. Let him finish. I think it's more to suit Richarlison, but yeah, it doesn't strike as a natural relationship at the moment. But there's many different reasons for that, I think.
What do you make of the relationship up front, Beast? Is it something that you want to see in these last few games of the season, or would you rather, you know, see, you know, Richarlison move that wide, whether he's going to like it or not? He seems to perform his best for Everton when he's playing from the left, cutting inside, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I think that is what he thinks is his favourite position. I think that is where he's most effective. I mean, going back to what Gav said, I mean, a lot of modern strikers now, they are used to leading the line on their own. I suppose when all those years ago when Inchy Heath got injured, they were saying Graham Sharp and Andy Gray were too similar. But I mean, they obviously had a hugely effective partnership. But yeah, it's different now, isn't it? Because like you said, they grow up. They're not usually playing as a pair, as you know, that 4-4-2, which was such a sort of standard formation in the British game for many years, has been eroded in recent years. And it's you know, it's all about having inverted wingers coming inside the other way and still getting the crosses in for a centre forward like Calvert-Lewin. Whereas Richarlison is that different type of attacker. He'd be one of those ones, like we said, on his right foot coming inside from the left, or even moving out to the right hand side. It's weird. He's sort of really blown hot and cold. I mean, obviously Calvert-Lewin can be streaky as well, but you know, like we're saying, 10 games now without a goal for Richarlison, and it seems to affect him, doesn't it? When he's not got one, he's not the main striker, but he does like to be in the goals. Yeah, I mean, it was unfortunate, obviously, that that Leno one went down as an Oggy at Arsenal, you know, because he had the shot on target, and obviously just went under his body. So I mean, I don't like them being given his own goals, but I can obviously understand why that one had to be. Maybe that one had been credited to Richarlison, he wouldn't be so prickly at the moment. But no, they don't create a lot for each other. I think any sort of suggestion they don't like each other, I think that's a bit nonsense. I'm not sure where that one's come from. But yeah, they're not sort of feeding each other in, are they? And like I said, Calvert-Lewin's supply line tends to come more from whether it's the Luca Dean crosses, stuff like that, or maybe even Seamus Coleman or whoever's getting up on the other side, or a threaded through ball from, I was going to say James Rodriguez, but from Ben Godfrey at West Ham United. So, yeah, I think that going forward, I mean, there's been fears, obviously, that, you know, the way Richarlison's been talking in previous summers, that he, you know, might have his eyes elsewhere. But, I mean, it'd be a bad summer for Everton to sell this year, given all that's gone on in the world, and you might not get the type of value you get for a top player like that. So you've got to hope they can hold on to Richarlison. But I think going forward, he is most effective when he's cut inside.
Mm. I think what's interesting to me, Gav, is that Richarlison's purple patch tended to coincide with Calvert-Lewin's little spell out of the team with injury. And Richarlison was then the main man up front. Obviously, you know, the big one was that he got that goal very early on at Anfield, didn't he? With that kind of... You know, leading striker running behind, and he looked quality then, didn't he? And to be fair, I think he looked quite good against West Ham as well at the weekend, despite not really getting the break in front of goal. But you know, as Bees rightly says, there, you know, it is something that does need to be solved, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but that goes back to what I was just saying previously, that if they both think that's their best position, you know, leading the line, and that the stats and performances will probably prove that, say, this year, is, but that's as individuals, isn't it? It's a different dynamic when there's two. And I think you've seen that, isn't it? You're playing a completely different role, and the players around you are playing a completely different role. So, it doesn't follow that if you've got two players who are both like playing up top, that when you play up top together, they're going to be as effective as playing as individuals. It doesn't work like that. And I think you've seen that. Because one of the things as well is, especially if Calvert-Lewin playing up front, what you lose then is Richarlison's creativity and general, you know, effectiveness out wide then, don't you? You lose that when he's playing in the middle. So, you know, losing that angle. So, yeah, Collins played 4-4-2 a lot, I think, hasn't he, as well, previously. Mm-hmm. I think though it's right to, you know, I feel uncomfortable giving Calvert-Lewin's comments here this week, criticising Calvert-Lewin, by the way, being a fully paid up Everton dar. I'll give Richarlison a stick, but I feel very uncomfortable giving Calvert-Lewin any stick at the moment.
He's listening. He's listening.
Yeah. And,
I think I've got to be in the Everton dark category now, Gav.
Yeah, but if Richarlison says the same thing, when the knackered army or I am, you know. I think Richarlison, he's suited to that single striker role as well, isn't he? And but I do think it's going back to my digital point. It's not just necessarily just their problem, Matt. I think it's just generally the lack of creativity in the team. Because they're only going to be as good a partnership as the people around them. Like you just said there, Bees, you know, show my Everton Dar credentials again. You know, and they said Andy Gray and Graham Sharp would never work, but it did, because they had Kevin Seedy and Trevor Stephen playing out wide. They had, you know, Reid and Bracewell behind them, you know. So that makes the partnership work. Mm-hmm. But Everton haven't got players of that quality behind the two of them. They've got players of decent quality. And Ben James is playing top quality, but if you don't give them enough to work off, then they're going to struggle, aren't they? And you're seeing that, aren't you? I mean, we just had the conversation about our lack of creativity, haven't we?
Mm. I mean, saying that though, it did work. Well, I would say it definitely worked when Carlo first came in, didn't it? You know, well, Duncan Ferguson first brought in, you know, playing Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin up front, and then, you know, Carlo kind of inherited it, and it did work for the first few months. Was that maybe just a new manager bounce, like that was overtaking everything else, or was it something in the way that Everton was setting up that's different this time?
If you wanted me to answer that, I think going back to what I've said all season, compared to when Carlo came in, that was proper football, wasn't it? Yeah. We are seeing artificial football, and I think that's affecting performances for the start. So that's the first difference of that between now and early 2020. Maybe a little bit of new manager bounce, perhaps. But I think it's, I do think you really underestimate the impact of no crowds and all this stuff that's been going on for the last, 18 months now on players' performances. And I think that's contributed a hell of a lot. That's always my default answer, this type of stuff, I think, in some respects. But it has to be, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether you watch. You watch Liverpool Man. You know, I don't want to talk about Liverpool Man United, but I will because it's the game on afterwards. And I thought it'd be hard pressed to see two teams who passed the ball worse than Aston Villa and Everton yesterday until I seen Man United last night. You know,
yeah.
I felt quite comforted about that. You know, but that wasn't a Man United Liverpool game last night that you get in front of a full house.
Yeah.
You know, it just wasn't. And I'm bringing it back to Everton. That has to affect our performances and the way we judge them.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, Bees were speaking about artificial football there. Everton welcome Sheffield United at home on Sunday evening. That's going to be the last game, hopefully, fingers crossed, the last game that's going to have no supporters at Goodison Park, because next time out they'll have 6,500 fans there. they've just got to try and battle through this in any way, shape or form, haven't they, really?
Yeah, they can't come soon enough there, the return of the fans. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's boyhood club. Also, before we move on as well, I don't know what those Everton Dars would have made of his bobble falling out of his ponytail there. the search for that on the turf. I mean, fortunately, he did find it and
crisis
was averted. But yeah, we saw it earlier in the season. It would be that brief interlude where, for three games, was it, Everton did have a very limited number of supporters, 2,000 in Goodison. But they got them over the line in a couple of tough Premier League games against Chelsea and Arsenal. Again, didn't work against United in the Carabao Cup. But yeah, there's going to be even more. 6,500. Fortunately, it's not 10,000, but it's 6,500, isn't it, for the midweek game with Wolves. So yeah, it's that last one. I mean, I've talked about it a lot of times, as we know. The erosion of total erosion of home advantage, not just Everton, across the Premier League, United are another of those teams who suffered from that. But it needn't be a disadvantage. I was speaking to Michael Keane earlier. It's a piece we've got out going on Sunday, and we did ask him about that, to be fair. I mean, we'll see that on Sunday, what his answer was to that. But yeah, I tell you, now he couldn't put his finger on it. He doesn't think that there's any particular reason why it has happened. But yeah, I mean, Sheffield United, to be fair, they could probably argue they're one of the teams who've been affected the most by this. I think Everton have been affected a lot. To be fair, Liverpool probably been affected a lot as well with the absence of the fans and what that's done. I mean, Sheffield United are a classic sort of newly promoted team, second season syndrome, isn't it? They you know, they're on off to a flyer, go great first year, and then they drop like a stone second year. But they could argue they wouldn't have been as wretched as they have been, and they would have probably picked up a few more points if they'd had Bramall Lane bouncing on many of occasions this season. So, yeah, it's one that Everton got to get over the line. And we talk about must wins. It has to be a must win if Everton are still aspiring for European football in some guys next season. Yeah, they've got to get through this one and then on to Wolves, and hopefully the crowd can help them through that one.
Gav, Carlo Ancelotti was speaking about this game yesterday in his pre-match press conference, and he told his tired to pay attention against Sheffield United, which I think is probably a very damning sort of phrase considering the home form that they've had, isn't it? And I think he's spot on. You know, Sheffield United are coming into this bottom of the league, but you know, this Everton is still going into this game with a certain amount of nerves, aren't they? And that's so weird to talk about a game.
Absolutely. Just going back to Calvert-Lewin, not the first slate of blame something on a bad bobble, by the way. I think I've done that happened to me in five aside loads of times, to be honest with you, blame on a bad bobble. Well, the warning signs are there, Ad. I mean, it's not that we've lost to other relegated clubs at Goodison this season, is it? Look, what's our record being like against teams at the bottom? You know, Burnley. You know, with all due
respect, obviously,
Fulham. You know, Burnley home and away. Brighton, we struggled away from home near the bottom. You know,
Newcastle.
Palace, we struggled at Goodison. Newcastle got beat. You know, it's all the evidence is there, isn't it, for Carlo to say that? There's an interesting point, though. They're just picking up. It is relevant to tomorrow, isn't it? That if we decide, I think Carlo said this in his aftermath, that would you be taking 4 points in the two-way games this week?
Yeah, that is a really good point, isn't it? Like, I remember, he did say that, and I thought to myself, the form West Ham we're in.
West Ham are in, yeah. I know you say, well, we beat West Ham, and but would you take 4 points from two games this week? Yeah, I probably would have. If we went on Sunday, and again, big if, and we have a long history of not, and we need to make a statement, we don't, but we can eminently win on Sunday. Or it's almost 7 points in three games. It's just, yeah, okay. Let's have that. I can see why Carlo said that. He's firing a shot across the bows of the players there, isn't he? You've messed up against teams at the bottom. At Goodison so far this season, don't let it happen again. And I think he's very wise to say that, because we need to show a little bit more attack and endeavour than what we did on Thursday and what we've shown in some games at Goodison this year, though, to be fair.
It's still the hope that James Rodriguez can train today and tomorrow in the hope that he can be fifth for Sunday's game. How crucial do you think that's going to be for Evan?
It's a massive difference, isn't he? When he is fit, I mean, that's the sort of the payoff that they've had to have with James Rodriguez this season. And to get a player of his quality, I've said on this podcast before now, there's an argument to say he's the most gifted outfield footballer to ever come to Everton, but he's maybe not at the peak of his powers now at 29. Gav just reacting to that one. But, he was top scorer in a World Cup tournament, wasn't he? He should have been player of that tournament, but he's up there, isn't he?
Absolutely.
You know, he wouldn't be at Everton if he was at that just now. And you know, he's 29 now. He has had injury problems, and he can't be discounted. Obviously, so much has been made, obviously, of that Virgil van Dijk injury in the derby. But before that even happened, you know, van Dijk went through the back of James, and that seemed to be the start of his, you know, his current struggles in and out. I'm not saying that he wasn't a picture of health, you know, never missed a game before that, but he probably pleasantly surprised Evertonians with his level of fitness early in the season. He'd looked sharp, and he'd done well even with, you know, that infamous game early in the season at West Brom. He didn't do a single sprint, according to the official statisticians, yet had ran the game without running. You're not going to get, you know, he's not durable enough to get 50 games out of him in the season or anything like that. But so, you cherish those moments when he is on the pitch. It is frustrating. You can see Carlo's getting frustrated. I mean, there's a Colombian journalist who, you know, is on the press conferences, and he's obviously very interested in James's condition. And he perhaps probes Carlo a bit more than Carlo wants to be at times. I thought that was probably as spiky as you're going to see Ancelotti in a press conference a few days back when he was asking about that one. But you get him out on the pitch, and you know he's always going to give you that quality. He can do things nobody else in that current Everton team can do. So you do cherish every moment he's on there. But you just perhaps got to realise he's not going to be there all the time. But it is frustrating, because you know he's in and out and he can't always get that rhythm. So yeah, you're just happy when he is out there.
Gav, I'm going to give you a bit of a tricky question, because I know how much you love them. 9 points left to play for. How many do you think Everton need to secure Europe?
Hey, Well, considering we don't know how many places are definitely Europe, that's the first point, isn't it?
Yeah.
The second point is, when we say Europe, are you including Conference League in that ad?
Yeah, I'm including the Conference League. Yeah.
Okay, we'll have that. You know, and also that wouldn't enable me to be a visionary regarding other teams' results. Which, considering I can't even get my own team's results right, you know, you are asking the impossible question. You know, but
that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, you'd put it this way. I think if we win our next two, which we are very capable of, I would think Wolves at home might be a difficult game for some reason. Win our next two, I think we can go into Manchester City away. Perhaps, to quote, paraphrase Kevin Keegan famously, we've got to go to Man City and get something on the last day.
I would love it.
I would love it, yeah. And so I think if we win our next two, I think we can be in with a shout. But it's all if, buts, and maybes about who's won what. And, you know, I mean, you've got this nightmare scenario, haven't you, if Chelsea don't win the Champions League and don't get in the top four, but win the Champions League and all this type of stuff, you know. And like, as you say, it's all a bit up in the air. But I'd say, I mean, what are we now? 56, are we? 56?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Level with Spurs.
That'll take us to 60. I'm just thinking of West Ham, who are on 58. So if we can get 62, West Ham are on 58, are they? They've got three easy games, haven't they?
Yeah.
You can see a position where us and West Ham both go into the last game on 62 points. But we've got City away, and I don't know who they've got.
They got Southampton at home last game.
Ooh. You know, so that will possibly be for six. But Arsenal are coming up on the rails, aren't they? That was a great result for me earlier on the week. So,
yeah.
We could do a whole pod. In fact, you've wasted this pod, actually. We could have just done... We could have just done 35 minutes on, not on our lack of creativity and, you know, pop bubbles and stuff. We could have just done that on, you know, what are the options?
Well, I think it's staggering that Everton are still actually mathematically in contention for the Champions League. Everyone's got to lose.
Everyone's got to lose. In other words, Ad, it answers the question, yes, but we need to win our last two games and go into the last game of the season, you know, needing to get something in the City, which may be difficult, but, you know, we'll see.
Right. Well, before we move on to the customary predictions, Gav, how gutted were you that Everton weren't in Royal Blue?
Well, it is. I mean, I love the amber kit, but I love the all blue kit even more, you know. I know you mentioned it, but... Yeah, but it was. I just think at Villa, because Villa's such a, you know, an old fashioned ground as well, and they're a similar club in terms of their historical stature and, you know, how they're regarded and stuff. It always seems great when we, you know, it's the most played fixture in English league football ever at Aston Villa. It's rich in history, you know. And, you know, I always think North Blue kit there always has resonates a little bit more. And I was very disappointed to see the amber, which is still nice, isn't it? But I was disappointed to see that that we didn't wear it last night. I know we wore it at West Ham, didn't we? But maybe that blame it on that ad, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Disappointment for Gav. The advocate didn't bring 3 points. Anyway, let's move on to some predictions. Bees, Everton against Sheffield United, 7 PM Sunday evening. An absolutely horrendous kickoff time. Can I just point out that's just ridiculous? But anyway, we move. Everton against Sheffield United. What's your score prediction?
I don't know why, but I'll just be positive. 2-0 Everton.
Oh, we like it, Gav.
I was going to say the same thing there, Chris. Is that the second time that's happened this week?
We both went 1-0, didn't we? And saw all that moment.
Yeah. No, I think we've got to go with... You know what? I'll raise Chris one. I'll go 3-0. I foresee the Calvert-Lewin, Richarlison partnership coming to fruition. I'll get them listening to this podcast and stuff. And it'd be good to see, for an Everton Dar, to see Calvert-Lewin score a scored a couple on Sunday, you know.
Yeah. As much as I'd love to see us keep a clean sheet, and I think we should be keeping a clean sheet against Sheffield United, considering the calamity of headers that we've had in defence over our last few home games, I've got no confidence that it's going to happen. So I do think Calvert-Lewin's going to score though, and he might score a couple. So I'm going to say 3-1. I'm going to go quite confident and say 3-1. I'm probably going with my heart more than my head there, because Everton really should be beating the bottom place team at Goodison. But you know, as we've talked about previously, we've seen how many Goodison games have gone awry in that sense in the past, haven't we?
Yeah.
Anyway, glut.
fingers crossed. We'll be back at the start of next week to talk over Everton's game against Sheffield United and to look ahead to fans returning to Goodison Park for Everton's game against Wolverhampton Wanderers in midweek next week. Thank you, lads, for joining me, and thank you for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.